All right. So last week, we were looking at John chapter 9, verses 1 to 12, the actual miracle itself, the healing of this guy who had been born blind or possibly even actually born without eyes. That there's something in the Greek that suggests it might be not just that he had eyes, but they didn't work, but actually he had no eyes at all. And what Jesus is doing when he takes the dust from the ground is he's kind of finishing the work of creation, creating eyes for this man to see. But what's really interesting about this, I think, is that for us, if we saw Jesus do something like that, that would be the absolute focus of our attention, right? All everything that we would want to talk about for weeks afterwards, if not months and years, would be the miracle of Jesus restoring sight to this guy. But actually, John, that's not the focus for John as he writes the gospel. And the reason I say that is because in John chapter 9, there are 41 verses. Two of them are actually about the miracle. Now, I'm no mathematical whiz kid, but that's like 39 verses are actually about something else apart from Jesus giving sight to the man born blind. And I think there are two things that John actually wants us to focus on as John chapter 9 develops and the conversations and the interactions develop after Jesus heals this guy. And one thing is he wants to focus on the identity of Jesus. All right, for John, the miracle is like, you know, the miracle is immense. Let's not undermine the miracle. But for John, the question that the miracle presents is, who is this Jesus? All right, we've heard it even this morning in the reading. Nobody's ever heard of anybody doing this sort of thing before. Yeah? Read through the Old Testament. You'll never read of, you know, you read of people being cleansed of leprosy. You hear of people being raised from the dead. But you do not, there's no account in the Old Testament of somebody who was blind being given their sight. This is like, man, we've never seen this before. We've never heard of this before. Who is this person who can do this? And I think John has in mind a passage from Isaiah 42, which we're going to look at a couple of times because it kind of connects with John 9 in one or two different places. But in Isaiah 42, this is an amazing passage in the Old Testament because what you're actually getting to do in Isaiah 42 is listen in on the conversation that is going on within the life of the Trinity. You're actually getting to hear God the Father speaking to God the Son about why he's going to send Jesus into the world. All right, and I love this. He says, I, the Lord, have called you in righteousness. This is the Father speaking to the Son. I will take hold of your hand. I will keep you. And I will make you to be a covenant for the people and a light for the Gentiles. Now remember in John 9 verse 5, last week, Jesus talking about himself being the light of the world. Okay, so not just the light for Judea, but for all the nations of the world, or for everyone, he's going to be a light for the world. And then this amazing bit, right? What is the Father going to send Jesus into the world? To open eyes that are blind and to release from the dungeon those who sit in darkness. It's like, oh man. So John, like, who is this guy who opens the eyes of the blind? And he's like, yeah, we know from Isaiah. This is the one who has been sent by the Father into this world to be the light of the world and to open the eyes of the blind. This is exactly what it is that Jesus was sent into the world to do. But actually, the miracle that Jesus does of giving this guy his physical sight, for John, John's looking at that going, yeah, but man, that's just the visual aid. That's just the visual parable for what Jesus has really done in this guy, which is not not just to open his eyes physically, not just to restore his physical sight, but for John, a much bigger deal is that what Jesus is doing here is opening this guy's eyes spiritually, giving sight to his spiritual eyes, opening the eyes of his heart so that he can see who Jesus is. Now, I'm going to show you this from John chapter 9, because as you read through John chapter 9, you can actually see this guy's eyes opening to the truth and to the reality of who Jesus is. All right, so let's just track through John chapter 9. John chapter 9, verse 11. This is like really early on after his eyes have been given back to him. And it's like the crowd are like, whoa, man, what happened to you? And this is what the guy says. The man, all right, just clock that. The man they called Jesus made some mud and put it on my eyes. All right, so just what does this guy think about Jesus? What's his judgment, as it were, on Jesus? He's a man. All right, at this stage, his eyes are just opened, and all he can see is a man. All right, now, a little bit later on, verse 17, the Pharisees have been called in, okay? And there's a whole thing going on with why they're hauled in. But they get hauled in, and they're like, they turn to the guy, and they're like, what have you got to say about him? And verse 17, the man replied, he's a prophet. All right, now, you see, he's not just what's his assessment of Jesus now? Well, it's up a bit. He's not just a random bloke. He's not just a man. Oh, he's a prophet. Right, already, he's beginning to see there's something going on between Jesus and his relationship with God. Right, sets him apart. He's got something about him that's different. All right, a little bit later on, verse 33. All right, the whole argument going on about, you know, is this man a sinner because he did this on the Sabbath or whatever? And the Pharisees like, he's not from God. What does this guy say? No, the man says, look, if this man were not from God, okay, so we've gone from man to prophet to a man sent from God. And that's a really loaded term in John's gospel. You know, right from chapter 1, and we saw it, you know, picking up on Isaiah 42, that this is the fact that Jesus has been sent from God. Alright, so John 6:46. John's already said this. No one has seen the Father. Alright, interesting again, this language of sight, isn't it? No one has seen the Father except the one who is from God. Right? Only he has seen the Father. So you begin to see how actually the sense of who Jesus is kind of, you know, rising as we go through this chapter. And then right at the end of the chapter, he's been turfed out of the synagogue, and Jesus comes and finds this guy again and says, and he's saying to him, look, you've seen the Son of Man, all right? And again, the language of sight, you have seen the Son of Man. He is the one speaking to you. And what does the guy say in response? Lord, I believe. And he worshipped him. Right? And see, what John's doing, he's charting the way this guy's eyes, spiritual eyes, have been opened to the truth of who Jesus is, the reality of who Jesus is. He goes from being the man in verse 11, right, up through this sort of ascending sense of, you know, there's something about this man and God, right up to the point where by the end of the chapter, this guy is on his knees before Jesus, worshiping him because his eyes have been opened and he has seen the reality of who Jesus is. He is the one who is the Lord, who has been sent from God to be the light of the world and to open the eyes of the blind, to do for the world what he has done for this guy in John chapter 9. All right, so you see what's going on here. There is this visual aid. The healing is a visual aid for a much deeper work of healing and restoration and recreation that is going on in John chapter 9. Jesus has come to open the eyes of everyone who has been born blind so that we can see the reality of who Jesus is. All right, think about it like this. If you'd been with the disciples that day and with Jesus, that little cohort, and you'd walked around the corner and you'd seen this guy who'd been born blind, yeah? And Jesus had turned to you and said, see this guy over here? What do you think I should do for him? Now, you see, I don't know about you. For me, I'd be like, that's a no-brainer, Jesus, right? The guy was born blind. Give him his eyes back. That's exactly the problem. Because you see, when Jesus walks around the corner and sees this guy, yes, he sees a man born blind and he will deal with that. But Jesus sees a much deeper issue, a much more foundational blindness, a much more serious condition. See, Jesus walks around that corner and his heart breaks because here is a man who is spiritually blind and cannot see the truth of who Jesus is. And Jesus is like, that's the problem. That's the issue. And that's what Jesus focuses in on. Jesus is like, he can't see me. He doesn't know the truth of who I am. That's what we need to deal with. That's what I've come to do. That's what I was sent by my Father into this world to do. That's what it means for me to be the light of the world, which he called himself in John chapter 9, verse 5. And I just want to finish this first section by saying, look, it is so important that we get this. Right? It's so important we get, first of all, that people's, the foundational issue facing people, whatever is going on physically or emotionally or psychologically or relationally or financially or socially, whatever's going on, the key issue that we need to be engaging with people on is their spiritual blindness. But actually, this is our key issue as well. Right? And it is so important that we have known Jesus open the eyes of our hearts. Right? None of us have a spiritual blindness deeper than our inability to see the truth, the reality of who Jesus is. And there is no greater privilege than having Jesus open the eyes of our heart. Even if, like the guy in John 9, it results in you being marginalized and misunderstood by your community. Even if it means being rejected and isolated and hung out to dry by your family. Even if it means facing hostility and misrepresentation from the authorities. All of which this guy endures in the short space of John chapter 9. But if you asked him, was it worth it? Was it worth enduring all of that? Living with the legacy of all of that? Just so that your eyes are open and you can see Jesus and worship him? I don't think he would have missed a heartbeat. And he said, absolutely it was worth it. And I would go through it all again for the privilege of seeing the truth about who Jesus is. And we need this. And it's an ongoing work, I think. We need this. This is the foundation of everything. Seeing the truth, the reality of who Jesus is foundational to everything else about being a Christian. The Apostle Paul, later in the New Testament, is going to pick up on this and talk about how this is how we are changed. We are changed when we see the glory of God in the face of Christ Jesus, and that is what the Spirit uses to change us from one degree of glory to another, to slowly become more like Jesus. Right? If our behavior is not changing, if our character is not changing, right? If we're not seeing the victory over sin in our lives, that the issue is we're not seeing Jesus clearly. Right? This is the foundation of our evangelism. Right? The whole thing about this guy being sent that you heard about last week. The whole thing, he is sent. Jesus is sent from the Father. This guy is sent by Jesus precisely so he has to testify about what Jesus has done for him. If we're struggling with evangelism, the issue is we're not seeing Jesus clearly. And if we're struggling with worship, right, the issue isn't the style or the content of the service. Well, it might be, but it's not here. But the issue is we're not seeing Jesus clearly. This is the foundation of everything in the Christian life, that he opens our eyes that we might see him. See him. And when we see him, everything else about being a Christian begins to fall into place. So we're thinking about how Jesus, as the light of the world, comes into the world to bring sight. And that primarily, I think we're talking here about spiritual sight, the sight that enables you to see who Jesus is, what Jesus is. It's the truth, the sight of the truth. All right, having our eyes open to see Jesus, who is the truth. And we've watched how John traces that through John chapter 9. But that's not the only thing that is going on in John chapter 9. It's not the only thing that's happening that this guy's eyes are being opened. And Jesus himself gives us the key to this, right? So right at the end of the chapter, John chapter 9, verse 39, yeah? I mean, if you think, oh, Mark, you're so insightful. How did you see all that? I didn't. I just read to the end and went, oh, right, Jesus tells us what's been going on here. Brilliant. All right, for judgment I have come into this world so that the blind will see. And we're thinking, so far, so good. It's brilliant, isn't it? So exciting. It's so inspiring to be on the receiving end of that. But, of course, that isn't all that Jesus says, is it? Remember how Jesus finishes that sentence. For judgment I have come into this world so that the blind will see. And we've watched that happen. We've seen it happen. And those who see will become blind. All right, there's two things going on as the light shines into the darkness. You read about this in John 3. There are some people who are drawn into the light, and there are others who scurry back into the darkness. And what Jesus is saying here is that judgment is being anticipated in how we respond when Jesus is put forth for the world to see. One of two things will happen. People's blind eyes will be opened. But isn't this interesting as well? The other dynamic that will be at play is that those who see will become blind. And I think this is much more sobering for us. All right. And what I want to suggest to you is that actually, alongside the man who was born blind having his eyes opened, the other thing that is going on in John chapter 9 is that the Pharisees, who of course at the start of the chapter, they're the ones who you know, we know everything, right? We see everything clearly. They become blinded throughout chapter 9. And you see it happening. I was just noting it on my hand, because this is how I write my sermons. As Pip was reading it, I was like, oh yeah, you can see this so clearly. You know, how their reaction is, you know, at the start, they're quite open. Like, who is this guy? What's he done? Why has he done it? And as the chapter goes on, all right, you get them saying, no, he's not from God. All right, so, you know, for the guy whose eyes were blind and he becomes able to see, kind of that was a key moment when he realized, no, Jesus must be from God. And at the same moment, going in the other direction, are the Pharisees going, no, he is not from God. And they deny the miracle. You know, did you notice that? When they called his parents in, they were like, is this the man who you say was born blind? All right, and Jesus is like, at least see from my works who I am. And they're like, no, we're not even going to look at the works. We're not even going to look at what you have done. And that sort of sense, you can feel the hatred and the hostility building all the way through chapter 9 towards Jesus and towards this guy who is a disciple of Jesus. And right up until at the end of the chapter, they cast the guy out of the synagogue. Right? It's like total rejection. We will not have you in our community, in our fellowship. And they're like, right, you were steeped in sin at birth. So you remember the question the disciples asked right at the start of John chapter 9. Who sinned, this man or his parents? And Jesus is like, guys, that whole way of thinking is completely wrong. All right? Well, that's exactly where the Pharisees are at. And they've made up their decision. It wasn't the parents who sinned. It was this guy. It was this guy who sinned. How dare you lecture us? And they threw him out. Why did they throw him out? Because he was a disciple of Jesus. All right? And the whole thing again about him being sent to the pool of Siloam, that is called sent. There's so much going on in that. But the whole point, this man was sent by Jesus to bear witness to the sight that he had been given by Jesus. And just think about what Jesus says in Luke chapter 10. Whoever listens to you, listens to me. Whoever rejects you, rejects me. And whoever rejects me, rejects him who sent me. So their rejection of this man, of Jesus' disciple, their rejection of the one who has been sent by Jesus to testify to the sight that Jesus had given him, their rejection of the one that Jesus has sent is their rejection of Jesus. And their rejection of Jesus is their rejection of the one who sent Jesus. Remember Isaiah 42 again. The Father who sends the Son to be the light of the world and to open the eyes of the blind. So the Pharisees, right, the man who was blind ends up being able to see. But the Pharisees, who of course can see, actually as the chapter goes on, they become spiritually progressively more blind. Which again is something that passage in Isaiah 42 picked up on. So again, this is still the Lord talking. Now, but about Israel, okay, about his people in with whom he is in covenant with. Who is blind like the one in covenant with me? Blind like the servant of the Lord. You have seen many things. Yeah, of course they have. They've just seen Jesus heal this guy. You know what I mean? But you pay no attention. Your ears are open, but you do not listen. So you see, as you read through chapter 9, nobody is staying still. No one ends up at the end of chapter 9 in the same place as they had started in chapter 9. As Jesus is presented, as it were, by the Father to the world, as he is testified to by someone whose eyes he has opened, as that is happening, everybody is moving. No one stays in the same place. They're either being drawn into the light or they're being driven away from the light. Or in the imagery of John 9, they're either having their eyes opened so that they can see Jesus more clearly and worship him and follow him, or their eyes are becoming increasingly blinded so that they are less able to see the truth of who Jesus is, and less able to worship, and less able to respond to him. Both those things happen when Jesus is presented to the world. Nobody stays in the same place when Jesus is held out. Everyone undergoes some kind of spiritual work. Either their eyes are being opened, or their eyes are becoming closed. That's why Jesus came, so that those who were blind might see, and so that those who see might become blind. I want you to feel the force of that. That's all I want us to do this morning, is to feel the force of that. You know, every time we do a messy church, every time we run an Alpha course or a Christianity Explored course, every time you do word one-to-one with somebody, every conversation you have in which you are testifying to the sight that Jesus has given you, every conversation you have where you are presenting Jesus to the world, right? No one stays the same after that. The end of a messy church, everyone goes home. Some people, their eyes will have been opened a bit. Some people, their eyes will have been closed. You get to the end of an Alpha course. Some people, their eyes will have opened. Some people, their eyes will have closed. And I want us to feel the weight of this, of it's an awesome privilege to be caught up into that process that is about anticipating the judgment to come. The Apostle Paul, again, talks about this, I think, very helpfully when he's writing to the church at Corinth. Yeah? And he's talking about his experience of being an evangelist. And he says, thanks be to God who uses us to spread the aroma of the knowledge of Christ everywhere. For we are to God the pleasing aroma of Christ among those who are being saved and those who are perishing. To the one, we are an aroma that brings death. And to the other, we are an aroma that brings life. So you see, Paul's picking up again on that same dynamic reaction that everyone has as the gospel is preached, as Christ is held out to the world. For some, this is pushing them towards life. For others, as they reject Jesus, or as they dismiss Jesus, or as they just shrug their shoulders and walk away, actually, it's pushing them towards death. For some, their eyes are opening. For some, their eyes are closing. And judgment is being anticipated and forged as people respond to Christ as we hold him out. Is any wonder that at the end of that passage, Paul sits back, takes a deep breath and thinks, oh my days, what am I doing? Who is equal to such a task? Who among us could bear the weight of being involved in such a thing? It's true for us in evangelism. It's true for us as well, though, isn't it? As we gather week by week, we come to church. And what are we wanting to see happen? We're wanting Christ to be held out to us. We're like John 12, sir, we would see Jesus. That should be the cry of our heart every time we come to this place. We would see Jesus. Show us Jesus. Okay, but every time Jesus is held out, none of us stay in the same place. Our eyes are being opened. If we respond to him, or if we dismiss him, or reject him, or ignore him, our eyes are being closed. Every home group, we open the Bible. We want to see Jesus. Okay, but none of us are staying in the same place as we open the Bible to see Jesus. None of us are static. We're moving all the time. We're either seeing more fully who Jesus is, or we are losing sight of him. See, our faith, it's such a dynamic thing. And it's easy to think, okay, it's okay, look, I don't really buy that, or I'm not really going to respond to that, or I'm not really going to do anything about that. I think you can walk away and just come back another time and pick up where you left off. Or you can just come back another time and it'll be okay. Jesus will still be there as clear to you as he was before. Actually, no, when you do that, you lose sight of Jesus. You lose sight of him. And when you come back, you're starting further back in your relationship with him. You see, as Jesus is seen, people are either being brought into the light to see who he is, to worship him, to be changed by him, to testify to him, or we are going back into the darkness where we are blinded to him. And I want to finish just by saying this. I think if we could grasp the reality of this, if we could feel the force of it, I think it would change our attitudes to coming to church, to coming to a home group. I think it would bring something to, you know, every time we do a messy church. Like if we believed this, what would be our experience of prayer as a church before we did a messy church? If we really believed that, you know, as we stand up here and as we talk to people about Jesus, judgment is being anticipated. We should never do a messy church without a night of prayer and fasting. Do you know what I mean? Or an alpha course. It matters how people respond to Jesus. We need to see the Spirit of God at work before we came to church on a Sunday. Knowing that what I do in the next hour will either draw me in or drive me away from Jesus. Now, we would be so careful about how we came to church. We would spend time preparing for that, because when we see Jesus, we don't want to close our eyes. We don't want to do that. You see, this isn't, we're not playing games. It matters. It matters what we do when we see Jesus. And it matters what other people do when they see Jesus.